Hi, I'm Tracy Koga, and thanks for downloading this podcast from ilikehugh.com. If you can, give us a follow or a subscribe. And remember that all the information about the guests in today's episode can be found at ilikehugh.com. Now, let's get started. Good morning, everyone. It is a very, very chilly day in Winnipeg, Manitoba. I think the thermometer read minus 31. So at minus 32, Fahrenheit and Celsius are exactly the same. So if you're in the States and you go by Fahrenheit, well, yeah, we're basically minus 32. But hey, we've been living in this for, I'd say, probably about 5 days now. So we've acclimated and it doesn't bother us. So on that note, let's open up the doors to all of our guests here at the Hugh Virtual Chat. And we're going to have a very, very interesting conversation. Hey, and we've got some new faces. I want to say welcome. And ladies, there is a man in the house, so to speak. Okay. So let's all be nice to him. All right. And good to see you, Rana. Hey, girl. Always good. And hi, Charlotte and Kirsten. Yes. And I want to introduce, and you're going to have to give a wave, Cheyenne.
Yes. Hi.
Hi. And is it Kaya or Kaya? Kaya.
It's Kaya.
Kaya. Give a wave, Kaya. These lovely ladies represent NSI. And of course, our gentleman of the hour, Curtis Moore. I want to say Curtis Newton, sorry, but he is also a local entertainer. And you know what? It was the bow tie. You know, that kind of, yes. And I think, Curtis, you are muted. So just unmute yourself.
There we go.
Hi. There we go. Hey. So we brought Curtis here today. Thanks to Susie reaching out. I'm going to start maybe with you, Curtis, if I can.
Sure.
Because it's, I think, now official. There is the news conference today, right now. Rana's nodding her head. And Susie's joined us. Good. So let's kind of clarify things. And just Kaya and Cheyenne, yeah, we're just kind of getting out of our red restriction zone. So you, Curtis, can now work. Am I correct?
I can, yeah. I believe they said as of the 12th of February, photographers are allowed to work for, you know, private residents and also shoot weddings, which is really exciting because I have a small wedding in less than a week from now. So it came under the wire. And so it feels nice to be able to reach out to clients finally, as the weather is freezing.
I know. So I don't know, hence, whether you're being doing a lot of outdoor shooting, but you know what, let's talk about this whole process for photographers, even at the get-go in the beginning, right, with all of the CERB payments and all of these big grants or whatever, the photographers were kind of left outside. So
yeah, a little bit. They finally categorized us as retail during the whole, you know, getting grant money and stuff like that. So we were lumped into that, you're retail. And then we were kind of forgotten during the last 2 months for that kind of slow opening of retail, seeing like long lineups at Costco and IKEA. Well, myself, who just primarily wants to work outdoors with couples, with families, far away, well over 10 feet away from them, very safe, very easy to manage. So it was a little frustrating, but I mean, yeah, it was rough getting through Christmas during the second busiest time of my year, being able to just say goodbye to all that.
Oh, well, you know. I mean, and there was a letter too as well, right? That photographer wrote.
We really didn't. Thank you, Susie, for helping us. And we really didn't want to be left out of this next. We didn't want this date to pass and us to be forgotten again. So we just got together as a community. A bunch of great people came together and wrote great copy for letters. Susie helped out and just got a nice campaign together to push over the last week. And it almost seemed like the word photographers kind of showed up after all that kind of happened, just as an easy win for the government to throw in to an extra group of small businesses in Manitoba. So that felt nice.
Yes. You know, it always feels good to be recognized. And yeah. I think too, there is other groups. I think the dance school community started a letter. The yoga fitness people started a letter. And I believe too, yoga fitness is now included in that opening of 25%. I'm not too sure about dance studios, but martial arts studios and some of those rec, you know, places are now get to open. Granted, 25%. So we'll see what happens there. But you know what? We'll come back to you, Curtis, because, well, I want to talk more about photography itself and what it means, not only, I guess, as a business and everything like that, but it is also for your mental health and wellness. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so that's going to be another side topic that we'll talk to. But I'm going to go now to our special guests, Cheyenne and Kaya. They represent NSI. And NSI is very dear to my heart because they do so many wonderful things and programs that support young filmmakers. And I wanted to talk about filmmaking because it's something that I think, I won't say was COVID free or anything like that, because of course, you know, you do need a crew, but very much like what Curtis does, you know, filmmakers see life through a lens. And I think that there's so much that has happened in this last year and a half, and probably more so as we go down into 2021, that the stories that are documented are so important. And Cheyenne, I'm going to go to you because you kind of have this new program, or you can talk more about it with NSI, because it's called the Art of Business Management. And I think we always think of the creative side in filmmaking, and we forget that it is a business too as well, and especially geared for the Indigenous people. So take it away.
Thank you, Tracy. Yes. So the Art of Business Management, essentially, it is targeted for those emerging to mid-level career Indigenous screen content creators. And it is for people who have reached a certain pinnacle of their career and they're looking to further develop their skills as producers. Because essentially, overall, what our programs are for is to help cultivate Indigenous storytellers, so Indigenous storytellers are telling Indigenous stories, and they're the ones creating that content and sharing it to their audience. So this program will really help people build up their production companies, understand more of the details regarding employment law, financial structures, HR management, everything that's behind the scenes that often they're just vaguely touched upon in courses, but we're really going to go in depth, further in depth, and we'll have presenters from not only Indigenous presenters and industry presenters from Canada, but all over the world. We'll have them, and that is through something like Zoom. It gives us the opportunity to bring in those producers and presenters internationally, which is amazing as well. We're also going to be matching up the participants with mentors so they can develop their business strategies and they can fully assess their skills so they can work with other producers as well as develop their own companies. So the whole point is to really just to have more Indigenous producers in Canada. I think it's definitely a niche that we need to expand upon.
Oh, and it's so important too to have that communication. And it's great now, like you said, through Zoom, that you can expand your borders. You're not just sort of stuck with the same local people. And you yourself, Cheyenne, you are an alumni too, correct? From NSI?
I am, yes. I did the CBC New Indigenous Voices back in 2012 when I was just starting out as a budding young filmmaker.
And you're still making films?
I transitioned to a music career for several years and photography, and now I am re-entering the screen industry.
Wow. So you said music. What kind of music?
Soul and blues music.
Oh, well, you know, I could put you on the spot. And can you sing a little tune for us?
Maybe towards the end.
Okay. Yeah, we'll need something to warm us up here because this is freezing cold. And so this is great now to go to Kaya. Kaya, too, Cheyenne spoke about this new program, and maybe you can speak about the creative process, but then how it is so important to have that business background now to be successful. And, you know, we have such great local Indigenous filmmakers. Hopefully we can expand that and include more, because I think the world is yearning for more film and photography and live music, all of that.
Yeah, so I think this program in particular kind of came about from a lot of conversations that were had, and specifically it involved the Indigenous Screen Office as well. And it was just, you know, we have these really amazing filmmakers that are just fantastic storytellers, and they're getting into their careers where now they're having to deal with deal memos and, you know, putting together financial structures. And it's like, you know what, it's time now that we have to sit down and really learn why we have to do all this, and then how to properly do it as well. It's a bit of a different language when you switch from the creative brain into a little bit more of a business side of things. So it's just about trying to learn the tools to do that. So it did very much come from like the Indigenous storytelling community saying that, you know what, these are skills that we need. These are things that we have to know, and we need to find a safe space to learn how to do it.
Well, that's interesting too, a safe place. What does that mean, or what does that look like, Kaya? You know, and I guess, you know, pertaining to the Indigenous filmmaker group.
Yeah, you know what, I think it's different for everybody. Like from my experience, I feel like when I'm in a group of other Indigenous people, there's a level of understanding where I don't necessarily have to explain certain things. They just know right away. So I think it's a safe space where people can feel comfortable in that way, but also just knowing that they're going to come, they're not going to be judged. Everybody knows that we're all learning. It might be the first foray into like legal language. And so it can be really intimidating if you're not in a comfortable space with people that have a level of understanding. So yeah, I was just trying to create those spaces.
Yes. And I have been noticing your earrings. Did you make those?
I did not. These were a Christmas gift from my mom.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And I unfortunately don't have the artist's name. I wish I did. It's on a card downstairs in my living room. But yeah.
Well, I was told by a little birdie that you too are an incredible beader.
I do dabble.
So we can place our orders then with you.
Oh my goodness. Oh, makes me very nervous.
Well, and how did you get involved with NSI, Kaya?
Oh, it's kind of a funny story. So a lot of my family is actually storytellers. So my dad is a writer for the screen. My brother is a filmmaker. He actually went through NSI, geez, like 15 years ago, a long time ago. And funny, my partner actually went through New Voices with Cheyenne in the same year. So I had all these ties to NSI, but I myself, I'm not a filmmaker. I totally appreciate and love storytellers. They have a special place in my heart because that's my family. So when a position at NSI came up, I just thought, you know, let's jump at it because I really just want to be here to champion storytellers. That's not the type of brain I have. I'm not that type of creative. So like, you know what, this is a perfect role for what I'm, you know, I have a little bit more of an analytical brain. So it worked out well.
Oh, well. And then, you know, say hi to Liz and Joy and, you know, keep up the great work. So I was going to now throw it out to everybody. Kaya, I guess, mentioned it and it kind of twigged in me, the art of storytelling. And I think it kind of applies to every single one of you here, because every single one of you are a storyteller at some point in time, whether it be through the lens as a photographer, or whether you're talking or doing peer support work and you're telling your lived experience, whether you're, you know, presenting and talking to communities about law and everything like that, and whether you're on social media and you're doing all of this communications work, we all are storytellers. So how does it, or I guess I'm going to start with Curtis, like say, and you've done weddings and it's supposed to be, you know, the greatest day on earth. And I'm sure you've got many stories, you know, horror stories and good stories and all in between. But what is it about capturing that look, that nuance, that photo, where it really says it all? And how does that make you feel, and especially the subject too, when they see that?
Well, that means everything to me. That's my approach as a business. In photography, is telling that unique and personal story. My inspiration behind, besides movies and television, is are just really good war and environmental photographers around the world. And what I learned from them as much as possible is how you can show up at a place like a room while a bride is getting ready with her mom, or any type of wedding, culturally or whatever, or even a family, if I don't know them, is first and foremost gaining that acceptance. Is, do they trust me enough to stand in front of them with a camera? They're vulnerable. It's a big day for them. And just gaining that acceptance so I can just be there and not be noticed as a photographer, that I just capture the true story of what that day means to him or her or both of them or the whole family, paying attention to what is important to them, as opposed to just kind of like Pinterest wedding, getting this shot, getting that shot, getting this shot. I really try to pay attention to what's the relationship with the mom, and where did grandma come from, and what did it take for her to get to this wedding? And as it's just really important to show my couples something that's meaningful to them, as opposed to just like the same thing every weekend. So telling stories is my main motivator for being a photographer.
Wow. Have you ever had a difficult time?
Of course, all the time. That's my job, is to parse through and come up with solutions. It could be anything. It could be a really weird family, you know, separation, and they're coming together in one day. It could just be someone's nerves. It could be scheduling. It could be rain. It could be a storm. So just dealing with all those difficulties or technical difficulties or emotional difficulties. I'm kind of like a photographer. I don't advertise that I'm a psychiatrist or anything, but I'm definitely there to guide if I need to, if I need to help out. Yeah, no, I've seen it all. I think I've seen it all. And then I see something and then I see it all.
Well, all again. Well, of course you're going to be back to work. So
yeah, I'm super excited for sure. Yeah.
Awesome. Rana, I was going to go to you. Storytelling, which I think is very integral for you in your family. So yeah.
I love that you actually just said that. Yes. I think for us, it's a very cultural thing as well. Right. I think that, you know, many of us come from places where storytelling, and I think Kaya and Shan can probably speak to that as well, that storytelling is a very integral part of different peoples. Right. And for us, especially, it's in our songs, it's in our ceremonies, it's in everything that we do. It's in our jewelry, it's in our clothing. So we carry that, you know, and I carry that in law, I carry that in my work. And even when you're trying not to, it still kind of comes out, right? Because it's a part of who you are. I found throughout my years, as I've gotten older, I'm more aware of it. And I'm more aware of how certain pieces of ancestral history or my parents' history or cultural pieces start to come out in my everyday communication, and whether it's in law or whether it's in politics or anything that I do. And I think it's a really beautiful thing, you know, and storytelling is just it's a beautiful art. It's a beautiful way to, you know, join hearts and join minds together and find commonality between peoples. Right. So, but I think specifically for us, for me, as my family, and as I have gone through the years, it is a very integral part of who we are, and how we engage with others. And you know, when you're kind of a first gen, right, you kind of mute a lot of things, right, because you want to act like everybody else and you want to fit in and you want to kind of, excuse my language, but kind of whitewash everything about you just so you fit in. But I think as you get older and you start to really take pride in those pieces of you, it just becomes really beautiful and it makes you feel whole. So that's my story. But it's very common in law. It's very common in when I go do speaking events, whatever. It's very much a part of life. So it's just pretty wicked. It's pretty cool.
And you know what? I admired that. And So I'm wondering, is storytelling a little bit more cultural? It's a stronger feeling or passion for storytelling in certain cultures than it is in others. I'm saying that from myself. I'm Japanese. And yes, Rana, I just kind of was whitewashed. And my parents never really talked about any of the history. And I didn't really learn any of it until much later on too as well. So I wouldn't say that we're culturally a storytelling culture, but when I look at the indigenous cultures, when I look at Rana's too, it is so much part of it. So I don't know, how does everybody else feel? Were your, Susie, did your parents, was storytelling a big thing?
Yes and no. I'm not sure if you can hear me very well. It's noisy in here today. Sorry, guys. You know, I come from that generation where, my parents' generation anyway, where it was, you know, we need to assimilate and we don't talk about, you know, where we came from necessarily. And we don't want people to know, like they couldn't tell, that we're not, you know, from here or whatever. So it was more about, I don't want to say ignoring, but it was like, there was a downplaying for sure. And it was more about being present and being here and not really thinking about, you know, the homes that they came from, which me as a child, I found very confusing and very, what's the word? It was just, not that they wouldn't tell stories, but it was like, we're here now, this is what we're going to focus on. And it's just like, yeah, but you have such an amazing story about why you're here now, why you're not there anymore. And I want to understand how that came to be. And because for me, that's part of my story, right? Like, it's not every day. Like you said, like in my generation, there were no half Filipinos, you know, lying around. There were like a handful, like I'm talking less than 10 of us in my generation. So, I mean, to me, I never got to look around and see people who looked like me, never. And so I had such a longing to understand, okay, what does this mean for me? Where do I fit in? What does this mean for, you know, how I'm going to grow up and who I'm going to look out and see as examples of where I came from and what that means. So they didn't really understand. And it's not a failure on their part. They were too busy just trying to survive and trying to raise two kids. But for me, it was an ongoing question, an ongoing quest for that story of where they came from and how this all came to be.
No, and that's all. And that's a huge question. Robin, you know, finding about each other. Truth be known, we were doing some interviews last night and, you know, listen, those stories resonated so long for me, and a lot of it was them trying to find out who they are, you know, and, you know, indigenous and non-indigenous. The story was all the same about them just not really fitting in because they didn't know really who they were. And that's so important for mental health.
I think I that series that we're doing is Get Your Human Back Again. And I think storytelling is a part of being human. I think wherever we come from, wherever our ancestors came from, and what we go through day to day, being able to share those stories allow us to get in touch with ourselves in ways that I think sometimes we forget to do. And I'm sitting here listening to you all talk about getting in touch with like cultural histories. And I remember as a kid, like you all know I'm Australian, g'day. like my parents always just like cut down stories about themselves or shut down stories about anything else. And I know it's going to sound a little weird. I think I came from a very different cultural background and someone planted me in this family in this lifetime. And I was like, why am I here? What am I meant to learn? Because this doesn't feel right. My feeling is I'm connected to the land and there's stories about the land and nature and I'm getting goosebumps while I'm talking about it. And And so I think I've always, in my own way, been this weird little storyteller. And Charlotte's been harassing me about writing a book, given that I've worked in a bunch of different countries and sharing some of those stories. And I think, regardless of like our histories or what we've gone through, I think stories are a way that we can connect to others, but more importantly, we can connect to who we are. And that is the piece about mental health that I think you were talking about, Tracy, is people want to connect to who they are and get how amazing they are, and that gets lost. So like, go forth and tell stories every day, all day, and play and just talk about it. Now I'll be quiet. Sorry, I got on my soapbox.
Woo. Oh, Robin. Oh, my goodness. Do I dare go with Charlotte now and Kristen? Because they go together, ladies, you know. They kind of spill off each other. So, so Charlotte. Oh, yeah, family stories.
You know, I just want to say that we all were witness to Robin saying that she's going to start writing her book. So let's all hold her accountable for that, because this is like a 2-year nag I've been working on her for. So anyway.
And then we'll work on the movie. I've got an in at, you know, like NSI. Yeah. So we'll get the movie done too.
You know, one of the things that Kristen and I see time and time again is, the fear of telling the story with families. They're so petrified to open their mouths and start to share. And there's for lots of different reasons. It's that, you know, their upbringing has shoved everything under the rug, or they're scared to out their family. And when Kristen and I give them that safe platform of ears and non-judgmental, the story starts to come out, and the feelings afterwards that they just, that they're like, I've never been able to tell my story or my family's story, and thank you for listening. And then you start to see, it's like that shame and blame that's been inside of them for so long, just their shoulders relax, their body, just the way they're looking changes. And then they say thank you all the time to us. And Kristen and I are just like, we were just listening, like you did the work, and, you know, and thank you so much for being vulnerable and sharing your story with us. And it's incredibly powerful. Kristen, I know you want to add to this.
Well, you kind of said exactly where I was going to go as well. And when it comes to mental health, especially a family member supporting someone who's struggling with mental health, we absolutely deny the story, and we have this culture of secrecy, in our home. Through the work that Charlotte and I do in supporting families and true peer support, you know, it's just a conversation and allowing someone to open up and be real. And typically we got through a curious conversation where we share first with our lived experience, right? And you know, there's a Brené Brown quote, and I'm sorry, Brené Brown gets quoted all the time. I still love her. I know she's overused, but it's something that resonated with me for years, and that was, owning your story is the bravest thing you can do. And for somebody who struggles with feeling failure as a parent because an adolescent is really struggling with complex mental health, you know, you deny that story. You don't share it first because you're trying to protect your child from judgment, and second because you really carry a lot of shame and blame, and you're still kind of caught up in the swirl of how did I screw this up so bad for my child. So when you can get people to step outside of that thinking, and you can give them a safe place and a connection because you've walked a similar path, the storytelling and the release and the step towards ownership is so beautiful and a necessary step towards wellness and recovery, right? So that's where my head goes when we think of storytelling.
I mean, these two ladies do some incredible peer support for families, and I've worked with you too, and now I understand. And I think part of it is just being a real listener, You can be engaged when you're listening. And I think that's just so important. And it's part of being getting our human back too, I think, right, Robin? So I'm going to go with Linda, because Linda, you manage to get stories out. Like, you're working with clients to find out, you know, about their businesses and life coaching. But you yourself have to tell your own story, right, too?
Absolutely.
And be vulnerable to let me be vulnerable with you.
Absolutely. Thank you. This is my favorite conversation ever. Storytelling is just, I can't remember the author, but the universe is made of stories, not atoms. And that is what I believe. I think stories hold us together. I think stories are incredible, powerful tools. That's why it is so important to see representation on the screen in books, because you need to be able to see yourself, to be able to make sense of your own life. I think that's what we search for constantly, is stories to help us make sense of ourselves. And I was actually just talking, I'm a coach, as Tracy was saying, and I actually was just talking to my coach this morning, and she was, she was challenging me to, because I tell stories every day on social media, and she was challenging me to say, are you offering enough of your vulnerability? Are you offering enough to let people in to see what you're struggling with as a business owner? You know, the challenges, like, I so appreciate what Charlotte and Kirsten were saying about letting people see what's behind the facade, you know, getting past your own shame, telling your story. So the question that my coach posed to me is, who can you help by telling this story? You know, your own child, just last week, I got a diagnosis of possible ADHD. Who can you help by saying, I am trying to manage that and have a business and, you know, do all the things while my other, you know, like all the things that we have going on, if I keep that inside, I'm not helping the other person, the other, you know, mom who's watching my stories and going, oh my gosh, she's also struggling with something that can be, you know, shameful or hidden or, you know, and she's still managing to, you know, do this, you know, like, it gives other people strength. So to me, stories are, yeah, being authentic and real. It's just, I think, the greatest gift. Storytellers, I think, are just the greatest gifts to our community and our society. So I'm so happy to be in this community, but I have to go shortly because I have to go pick up my daughters at school in a few minutes. But thank you.
Hey, life goes on, though. It's okay. We're all in this. No. Well, thank you so much for sharing, and you're wonderful. And it was interesting, just what Linda was saying, being authentic and being real. So Cheyenne and Taya, I know that storytelling for the Indigenous people is very, very strong and very real. And I know, especially for young filmmakers, right? It's to tell their stories. I'm just curious now, and maybe wondering, with everything, are Indigenous filmmakers specifically making it for an Indigenous audience, or are they thinking more global now? Because I know that if you're storytelling, your stories are very personal. Cheyenne, Kaya?
Well, I guess I'll go first, Cheyenne, if that's okay. From the conversation I've had, when I've heard, people are thinking in a more global sense. I think even those stories can be very specific, even to an area or to a people, I think there are still universal truths in them. Mm-hmm. People across cultures, backgrounds can relate to, that specificity. And I think that's not something to shy away from. I actually think that we're seeing a great deal of demand for it. We want to hear those specific stories, because mm-hmm. I think we're realizing society isn't this, like, I don't know, one size fits all. It's not like this kind of, this is the mainstream. It's like, I don't even know if mainstream exists anymore. I mean, I think this, that specificity is so important. And we want to hear more stories about that. And then I think people across the world relate to them.
Yeah. Cheyenne?
Well, I wholeheartedly agree. I feel like there is a cultural shift right happening with the everyone's perspective on it. It's about representation on screen, but also I don't feel that it's only targeted to rewriting the history, because I do see there's so much importance in understanding the history of Indigenous peoples through their lens and their perspective and their story. But I think it's also just transforming the shift to the present, mm-hmm. to issues that are happening now, and also to celebrating successes and have, like Kay said, just having that connection of not seeing Indigenous filmmakers or storytellers as separate, but interwoven into the entire film and screen industry. So I think it's just we are integrating. Everyone is integrating, and stories are human. Stories are heartfelt. They're soul felt. I don't think that can be changed. It's just a different way of communicating. And I think it's beautiful to see how the industry is shifting right now and transforming. I think that it's an entire new chapter. So it's exciting.
Well, just, yeah. Go ahead, Kaya.
I was just going to add to that, stories to an Indigenous storyteller doesn't necessarily have to do what has been seen as a stereotypical Indigenous story. I think, a story coming from an Indigenous storyteller makes it Indigenous, right? Like that's their perspective, that's their lens. And so that's the way they're going to tell it. That zombie movie by Jeff Barnaby just came out, I think, last year. And I love a good campy zombie movie, so I think it's just amazing. I haven't seen it yet, so I don't know if it's campy, but I'm just loving that, zombie stories and, just a wide spectrum of genres.
I don't know. Curtis, can you comment? You're the TV movie buff. Oh, you're muted, I think.
Okay. Which one is this?
What movie was that? Kaya?
Oh my goodness. It's by Jeff Barnaby.
Oh, a zombie movie. It sounds like the only zombie movie I haven't seen.
Well, speaking of movies while we're here, what movies do you like to watch, Curtis?
I think I've seen everything online now. I'm just having fun in Disney Plus with my kids. Uh-huh. Just the new Marvel shows that are coming on and the Star Wars shows and just having fun with my kids. I can't think of I miss going to the theaters so much. Like that was my therapy all the time. So it's been rough, and I hope we can get back to that soon.
Yeah. Well, yes. And you mentioned family. So how do you talk to the kids and sharing, storytelling and what does that look like? I guess, in the modern age, you've got younger kids.
Myself with my own kids, you mean?
Yes, yeah.
I encourage them to, I kind of force them to journal, try to journal a few times a week. And that includes drawing and painting as part of journaling. So just trying to, I think this is going to be a big time to look back on, and we shouldn't hide it. And I'm looking forward to years from now, looking back at their thoughts and how they felt during this. That's what I focus on the most, is try not to be the news. I don't watch the news. I'm on social media, which is just as
bad,
discouraging. I try to, and so are they in some cases. So, mm-hmm. I just try to remain positive, and we just take moments throughout each day to try to be present and off devices and experience things together, and then record things.
Have you documented, like taken photographs through all of this too?
Yeah, there was times where I just couldn't, just picking up a camera was rough. But then, shortly after that, it was the therapy, that telling the story of, I just went through a bunch last night of of, it was last March, like my son and I going into the grocery store and pictures of empty toilet paper racks and just when all this started and just kind of going through those no school and just trying to figure out some kind of homeschool online learning when it was a big mess and teachers didn't know what to do. So just looking back on those pictures were just such an impact of what it was, like what it, not what it looked like, but just like what it felt like.
Oh, I mean, yeah, you have to document that and put that into some sort of book because there isn't a lot. Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was like, I mostly weddings for the past 12 years. And this last year was the biggest jump into families. That was quite easy because in April or May last year, when we were allowed to like go out again and get haircuts, I just did family sessions. It was all postponed weddings and then just family. Because it just was more, family photos became more meaningful to people, and more important and more therapeutic. So that was a big, thing. And I expect the same thing today too, now that I'm allowed to work, it's haircuts are being done and I'm allowed to take pictures. So, I expect a kind of surge of, family moments being captured.
Well, no, I think, everything's kind of, you know, doing a pivot, and it's just so good that photographers are allowed out, so to speak.
Yeah, it's like we still want to, in our community, we're trying to put out all the items we need to make sure that we're being safe as possible. I'm grateful to our government in some ways of some restrictions. Like, I can't imagine being in a New York wedding photographer where, you know, 150 people are allowed to go, you know, and having really good couples that aren't pressuring me into, it's okay, you can come, we're just doing a secret wedding in the basement and you come take the pictures. And I'm glad I don't have any of those. It's looking like, although we're at the end, I can see the light at the end of the tunnel finally. And it's nice.
Oh no, that's great. Well, and I know too, this is February, so it's February blues and it's flipping cold outside. I know, it's just like we're seeing a little bit of a light in the, you know, at the end of the tunnel. Cheyenne, you're in Montreal. What are things like there?
Oh, I can't complain. It's a balmy minus 16. Sorry.
But then as far as openings, how are things?
Oh, we have a curfew still.
Okay.
But it's gradually shifting and they're slowly reopening non-essential businesses. It is what it is.
I know. It is what it is. Yep. Oh, so Susie now, I guess the cold, the blues, we've got 25% open. How do you feel?
I feel good. I feel like it's a challenging week though for a lot of restaurateurs who are obviously gearing up for Valentine's Day. And I don't think that very many of them will open just because they will not want to deal with a rush, with an influx of people. And I feel like most people might have their Valentine's Day plans already kind of in motion. There's so many online options now where you can still pick up, you can do meal kits, you can cook at home, you know, kind of thing. So I think that they're going to, I think a lot of them will be slow to get to that 25% just because they want to get through this weekend. Next week, I'm sure you'll see much more readiness and functionality as far as the restaurants are concerned. But for this weekend, I don't blame them for not wanting to get to that point right now because they are trying to execute this, you know, big weekend for them, really. And I think it's great, though, that what I find with this Valentine's Day during the pandemic is that I feel like we get like 3 days of it now, because a lot of these meal kits, you can decide if you want on the 12th or the 13th or the 14th. You could have three Valentine's Day dinners if you want to, which I think is kind of fantastic. So that's all good as far as I'm concerned. And be nice to your restaurant staff, as I often like to stress. Be nice. Be kind. Yeah. Be courteous.
Oh, yes. Yes. No doubt. Yeah. What are you doing for Valentine's, Missy Rana?
I'm going to sit back and I'm going to be angry and just kidding.
Three dinners, Rana. You can have three dinners.
And I'm going to be like, where are all the men in this world? Just kidding. I don't know. I'm just going to pretend it doesn't exist. Oh, Valentine's Day sucks for single people, man. Just call this what it is. I don't know why we beat around the bush. Just
I could also say that it sucks for a lot of people who are in relationships, so.
I'm totally just being a jerk. No, you know what? I don't know. I have no real plans. It doesn't really exist to me. I have no one buying me flowers, so whatever.
We'll buy you flowers, okay?
Yeah. But yeah, no, it's another day, but you know, the February blues are real, right? I think that, there's a lot of, people just seem a bit down this month more so than normal. Last month was very tough for me, but I think this month has been a little bit, so I hope people just, and it's the cold too. So I hope, I hope we're just kind of looking after each other and checking in with people. And
I think that's a perfect
maybe a little extra this month. Go ahead. Sorry.
Okay, so that's a perfect reason though, Rana, to celebrate like love in general. Like this pandemic has really kind of, you know, I don't want to say that romantic love is overrated, but I mean, it's kind of overrated in some senses. And if you can expand your circle of love to just celebrate people that you love and miss in general, opportunity to do that. This does not have to be about, you know, traditional romance or anything like that. Let's just celebrate love, period. And if that means, you know, getting together with your niece and having, you know, little hearts and hugs and kisses, like all those things are so important. So don't get hung up on the romanticization of this holiday. If we can expand the definition of that, I think that would be so beneficial for our mental health and for just all of us right now, you know?
And I'm really, so like, just as a disclaimer, I'm really not that angry. I have a very fulfilled.
No, I friend. Like angry Rana. So, I don't want
the rage to come out once in a while.
No, you are wearing blue. Yeah, you are wearing blue.
All jokes aside, no, man. I mean, we're all in it together, right? We're all just we all have our people, we all have our friends, we all have our connections, and you know, there's nothing more valuable than that. And if this year has taught us anything, it's know who your people are and have them, take care of them, right?
Right. And you know what, Rana? You can get a family photo shoot with Curtis. There, show your love. Call you. Oh, and what are you doing, Robin?
I'm dating someone that thinks we should celebrate love every day and not just pick Valentine's Day. So we're not doing anything for Valentine's Day at all. because I've sat down and thought about it too. Why? Like, we have Bell Let's Talk Day one day a year, and it's like, woohoo, let's talk about mental health. And then we have Valentine's Day, and it's like, woohoo, let's celebrate love. Why don't we celebrate that every day? Like, as Susie said, love for our families, love for our friends, romantic love, whatever it is. So I want to change those things up, that every day I celebrate into the person I'm dating. Every day I want to celebrate how I feel about you, like, and how much I adore you. So that's what I'm going to do every day, nothing special like this coming weekend. And that's my commitment to my family, my friends, and everyone. So yeah, every day.
Well, now we all want to date Robin.
Yeah.
lucky girl.
Yeah, maybe she could, or Robin, you can talk to our husbands and they can write it down.
Well, Charlotte's forever interpreting girl for me, because, you know, the boy in here goes, what? What was that? Charlotte goes, let me interpret. So happy to chat with the guys out there, because the guy brain is completely in here. But I guess being culturalized as a girl as I grew up, I now term myself a hybrid. And I love this hybrid. And I think the person I'm dating quite likes the hybrid as well.
I don't know. I think you've got a book there. I see a lot of heads going up and down. Yes, yes, yes. Well, you know what, and Kristen and Charlotte, you're at your lovely cabin. You're looking very, you know, chic. So anyways, just to be outside of the house, I'm very jealous, but just a quiet Valentine's Day too. Or you don't
like it? Yeah. My partner's like Robin. He celebrates every day, not just on February 14th. So I don't know what we're going to do. Probably a bonfire outside if the weather's good. Well, no snowmobiling. Snowmobile's out now, but yeah, it's nice being out here. So.
Yeah. Well, that's good. How about you, Kristen?
I'm going to celebrate Valentine's weekend by loving my nails and toes and going to visit and support my local nail spot. Yeah.
Yes, that is the greatest love.
Safely. Safely. Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. And how about you, Cheyenne? In romantic Montreal, I have to say, I love Montreal.
It is a beautiful city. I'll just probably be going for a walk. And I do resonate with what Robin mentioned about just expressing love for your familial support system, your friends. And I think it's important, as difficult as these times are, to find a moment every day and just express gratitude. It can be something small, it could be something big. Just, I think having that moment to reflect on what we are grateful helps anchor us.
So there is a silver lining to all of this. And how about you, Kaya?
You know what? Me and my partner have been together for 11 years. Wow. And we have never once celebrated Valentine's Day. It is not in our wheelhouse. That's something we just don't do. And it's never been an issue. I don't know. I think that's just the type of people we are. We're pretty low key and you don't get into like huge celebrations. However, this year, I will say though, we are babysitting our niece who is about 6 months.
Ooh.
Her parents are going out and I'm so looking forward to it because she was born in August and we did not get a lot of time to spend with her because of COVID. So Valentine's Day evening, we're going to go spend it with our little baby niece.
Wow. So that will definitely be special. Let's hope she doesn't poop. I'm just kidding.
You will poop. It will definitely be poop.
Oh, yeah.
Did I hear someone say nails and pedicures are...
Yes, yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay, there's my Valentine's present.
Yeah, I'm going. And so Curtis, too. You know, you've got a whole family. You can't forget Valentine's.
No, I will be finding some delicious local food to grab and treat my girlfriend. As best I can, maybe a little mini date to show extra gratitude towards my children. Mm-hmm. My daughter and I can go out for a nails date for sure. Yeah. I need mine painted too. So, I'm looking forward to it. I like the, love each other every day kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But it's nice to have that day to scramble and put something, hopelessly romantic together.
Oh, well, regardless, let's all share our love too with everybody. And, you know, thank you, Cheyenne and Kaya, for joining us, and Curtis. It's been great to finally meet you, and maybe we'll see you at the next wedding celebration, wherever we go. And and we look forward to some great filmmakers coming out of NSI. So, yeah. So share the love. I know it's cold out, but enjoy the sunshine. That's the best thing, right? The sun is out. Yes. Yeah. Okay. So we'll wrap it up here and we'll see you all next week.
Thank you.
Hey.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tracy.
Bye, everyone.
Woo-hoo. Well, next week
nice seeing you guys.
Next week is all about human rights. We're having guests from the National Gallery of Canada from Toronto.
Okay. Right on.
Let's see how Theo's doing. Love you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. This has been a production of ilikehugh.com. Podcast distribution from the Sound Off Media Company. What happens when we play outside? We become healthier, both mentally and physically. We become more creative and more focused. We connect with nature, each other, and ourselves.
Let's Take This Outside, a new podcast hosted by me, Marianne Iveson, an aspiring outdoor athlete and nature lover. I speak to athletes, outdoor professionals, and scientists about their connection to nature, how it affects their performance and everyday life. Let's Take This Outside, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, and at letstakethisoutside.ca.
Hi, I'm Mercedes Nickel, four-time Winter Olympian and host of Dropping In, a podcast with Mercedes. This is a podcast where I interview a bunch of different people. I get the good, the bad, and the ugly, as well as I share my stories along the way. Now you can drop in at droppingin.com or subscribe on Apple, Spotify, and YouTube. I'll see you soon.
Another Sound Off Media Company podcast.